You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
I'm Rob Russo.
I'm Jamie Dumont.
I'm Aaron Kaufman.
And this is
The Fabulous Invalid.
Hi, fellas. Boy, it's all boys today.
Yeah, Aaron, I'm so glad you're on mic today.
Oh, thanks. Me too.
It's huge.
It's huge for us. Well, today is sort of special.
Yes.
For a couple reasons.
Yes.
It's kind of the day we're celebrating Rob's birthday, right?
Oh, true. Yeah.
Even though your birthday is technically tomorrow.
I think that's where you were going with this, but yeah.
Well, I said it's special for a couple of reasons.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's your birthday, which is huge.
Huge.
But tomorrow. But also, today marks the 1 year since you and I sat down in a cafe to talk about doing the show.
It's actually 1 year to the date.
1 year ago.
That's incredible.
To date.
Wow. Look at how far we've come.
We have.
Yeah. No, I know. I wasn't saying that in a facetious way. No,
it's so funny.
Pretty incredible.
I've said this before, probably not on this show, but quite literally within like 5 minutes of meeting you and talking to you about theater, I was like, do you want to be a co-host? Which was not why we were meeting. We weren't actually meeting for you to be a co-host or let alone a producer of this whole thing. We were just going to talk about maybe doing this little history thing idea.
Yeah.
And well, that went poof super fast.
Well.
It's very rare when you meet, I think, such a kindred spirit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's not a super common
And you know it, too. That's
thing.
The thing about
And especially for me, because I have no friends, and I'm not good with people. And so, you know, as you get older in life, you two are
it's
younger.
It's harder to make friends.
It is hard to make friends, but as you get older in life, you reevaluate relationships you look at what's important, and your time in your day gets shorter, and the time gets shorter in general. So I don't know where I'm going with that.
But then you found Aaron on Instagram, is that right?
I did. I don't think I've told this story, although Aaron knows it. Yeah. I was looking for engineers. And I found Aaron on like a work site where you like, you know, you throw work out there and then they match you up with somebody, right? And then you didn't respond, and I was like, I don't know if this work site actually is like, I don't know what it really is.
Yeah.
And I think they wanted me to pay to connect with you directly or whatever. And so I found you on Instagram. And I was like, oh, he's cute, he's young. And his mother was in a chorus line.
Right. It just so happened that it was like a week after the New York Times had run an article on Chorus Line. So there was photo of my mom in her dressing room, which I'd posted.
Yeah, like putting makeup on, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like front and center. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it just so happened. And then this random person sent me a DM and was like, I don't know if you'd be interested, but I have a music opportunity for you. And I was like,
I didn't start it out as I'm not a creepy stalker.
I don't remember. I don't
know
if that...
I did. We'll have to check.
Yeah.
I usually start things like that
Lead
way.
Lead with I'm not a creepy stalker.
Right. Which should make you afraid.
Antenna should go up.
My husband would always say, Jamie, if you think you want to say it, don't say it.
Yeah. Well, happy anniversary to us.
Yes,
to
and to the invalid. Yeah. Let's move on with the show.
Perfect. So we thought what would be fun would be to sit down and chat and talk through all the nominees and make some predictions about who we think should win and who we think will win, which is always a fun dichotomy.
You love a Tony pick moment.
I love a Tony pick moment.
You love you love a list show.
I love a list show. Well, yes.
This is our third one.
I love doing a list show, yeah.
And
yeah.
Aaron likes listening to them. I was so surprised at how much you liked the year-end roundup. What did we do?
Oh,
we did a year-end roundup.
And we did a season preview for the spring.
Season preview, which, Aaron, I think you did like.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
None of the other ones.
Well,
just that one.
None of the other shows.
The rest are a real bore.
As Rob would say, the other shows are too in the weeds.
To kick us off, we're going to start with featured performer categories. And let's start with best performance by a featured actor in a play. So what's fascinating about this category this year is that of the five nominees, all five of them are actually very seasoned musical theater performers.
They are.
Which
That's
is
very true.
Which is so interesting. And I think it was Gideon Glick who texted, who tweeted that of the five, three of them are gay actors playing gay roles. And that's, you know, become a real subject of debate.
Is Brandon gay?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh. Let's go, Brandon.
Right? no, but, you know, all these straight actors keep winning awards for playing gay characters, and gay actors are like, hello, can we play some of these parts? So it's pretty exciting to see three featured nominees playing gay characters who are out gay actors themselves. So this, I think, is probably an awful category to start on because I think it's one of the biggest crapshoots of the whole evening. I personally think that Gideon Glick should win, and I'm sort of putting into the world that he will win. Jamie, what do you think?
I couldn't agree more. In fact, I'm the reason I have this look on my face, which nobody else but Rob and Aaron can see, is that I'm surprised you'd say that, because to me it's just such a lock that Gideon is going to win and should win. But I also sometimes live in a bubble, you know.
Well, to run down the list, well, you haven't seen All My Sons yet, but Benjamin Walker is just riveting on that stage.
Does he play it in his underwear?
No,
oh.
He doesn't. But I think he might be shirtless at one point. Brandon Urinowitz is the best part of Burn This, in my opinion.
Which I did not see and probably will not see.
Yeah, it's a limited run. He's fantastic. We both love Gideon, of course. Robin DeJesus in
Fabulous.
Boys in the Band. He was incredible.
Fabulous.
And I was so thrilled to see him nominated because that was a show that opened a year ago, literally a year ago.
He's so good in everything.
He's good in everything.
He's a wonderful actor, and I'm throwing this out in the world. Cast him more, please.
Cast him more, please. And I believe he's been nominated for Tony like three times.
You know, was he nominated for In the Heights? And
he was in La Cage. I don't know if he was nominated for that.
Was he the original in La Cage?
Yeah, in the revival. He was fantastic. He's fantastic in everything. So you see what I mean?
Like, we don't have facts to back any of this up.
It's a really great category of five really incredible performances. So my money's on Gideon, and so is Jamie's. Moving on. Best performance by a featured actress in a play. This, I have a feeling we're going to be in violent agreement on. This is a really early To Kill a Mockingbird love, but I think Celia Keenan-Bolger is a shoo-in to win this award. What do you think?
I'm still on violent agreement.
Violent
Every
agreement.
Time you say that, it
violent
throws me.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree that Celia should win, and I agree that Celia will win. And again, she's one of those actors that just show up and just throw all the awards at her, because I've never seen her be anything less than brilliant in absolutely everything.
No, absolutely. And it might have seemed like a gamble to have a 40-year-old actor play a 6-year-old, but if you know Celia Keenan-Bolger, that's not a gamble at all.
And I also want to just say that this is a tough category. You have Fionnuala Flanagan, who many people may not know, but she is an incredible actress who's been working for a very long time. Christine Nielsen, who stepped into Gary,
right?
Like, you know, with, you know, 2 seconds. Julie White, who stepped into Gary with 1 second, of rehearsal time. And Ruth Wilson, who, if anybody doesn't know Ruth Wilson and has never seen this television show from England called Luther, well, then do yourself a favor. Yeah. Ruth Wilson is a force.
Yeah, she was fantastic in King Lear, I have to say. Okay, so moving on. Best performance by a featured actor in a musical. This is another really fantastic category, and one where there's violent agreement.
Well, we still have, like, post-coital glow with... Is that... No, that's bad.
No, that's good.
That's good.
Yeah, that's
so
good.
We, again...
It's a little gross.
It's a little graphic. So I may have to cut that and say this, and that is, we have just recorded an episode with Andre DeShields, which will air
before this airs. If you haven't listened to it yet, please do.
It's fantastic. And Rob and I had one of those, like, transformative, and Aaron, for that matter, Aaron was there as well, evenings where we talked to Andre for almost 4 hours, I think, from beginning to end, although we didn't record all of that time.
Right.
We had dinner with him. Aaron, you had to leave, unfortunately, because you had something else to do, but... It was one of these life things that I will never forget, and I know you feel the same way.
Yes.
And listen to the episode, because if you want lessons on how to live your life, and if you want lessons on how to be grateful and how to look for all the beauty in the world, listen to Andre DeShields, because he knows how to do it.
Yep. And it's incredible. He has given us so many extraordinary performances over the last 50 years that he's been a performer. He was the Wiz. He was the Viper. He was the Jester. He was the Horse. And now he's Hermes in Hadestown. He starts the show off, if you haven't seen it. He strolls onto the stage, sort of struts onto the stage, and you cannot take your eyes off of him. There are a few performers, I think, who have that kind of stage presence, where you hang on every single word that they say or sing. If he doesn't win this Tony Award, I won't believe in God. Yeah, I give up. There's no point in having another Tony Awards if he doesn't win this Tony Award.
And Aaron, you're a fan of Hadestown.
I love Hadestown, and I 100% agree with you, Rob, because you're talking about how you can't take your eyes off him in a show that has a lot of performers who are very magnetic.
Yes.
You'll go back to him, and then you go to someone who's in another category we'll talk about, and then someone who's in another category, but you are always, you never miss something he does.
He is a larger-than-life presence, and when you need someone to play a god, you get a theatrical god to do it, right? Best performance by a featured actress in a musical. This category is an embarrassment of riches. I'm going to read the names because I have to. Lily Cooper in Tootsie, Amber Gray in Hadestown, Sarah Stiles in Tootsie, Ali Stroker in Oklahoma, and Mary Testa in Oklahoma. These are five incredible women who give five incredible performances.
I couldn't.
And just like last season, it's one of the toughest categories, I think, in terms of how do you make this decision, because they're all so incredible. But all that said, once again, violent agreement. This hasn't been very interesting yet.
We haven't had any violent agreement on this one.
I shouldn't assume. I'm clutching my pearls. Okay, well, I think that Ali Stroker should win, and I think that she will win. Jamie.
I think that Amber Gray should win, and I think Ali Stroker will win.
Okay.
Not hugely controversial. We're not at fisticuffs.
No,
you are still
yet.
Clutching your pearls, though,
yes.
Rob. I will point that out.
There's
a version where I think Amber will win, but since we're doing this sort of early, we have to make a decision. And this is something I struggled with, because I do see this thing where Amber wins, because
you can imagine it.
Well, I thought, when the nominations came out, I thought, oh, this is going to be, there are going to be several categories where we won't know until the actual envelope is read. And that, I think we feel that way every year, and then it narrows down and becomes clearer and clearer as you get closer.
Yeah.
And I think that's what this is happening. And look, there are three or four ladies who aren't on this list, right? That should be.
Yes.
And that's not to take away from anybody that is on this list, right? Because, this is a tough one, right? I think Mary Testa is actually giving one of the greatest performances of her career.
100%
without
agree.
Question.
Yep.
And I think people, I think smart people understand what she's doing on that stage, but what she's doing is so subtle and Mary Testa is maybe not somebody who's known for subtlety, but it's so beautiful and brilliant what she does every night.
Her scene work in Act Two alone should win her a Tony Award, right?
Absolutely. I said this when my husband and I went to see this at Bard many, many years ago. I said, oh my God, it's finally the role that Mary Testa has deserved her entire career. She lends this stature to the production.
Mm-hmm.
She lends this pathos,
mm-hmm.
this credibility, this sort of star quality that, because it's not a starry show, right?
No.
It's not about that.
Egalitarian, yeah.
Right. And I don't think I can ever say enough
about it. So maybe as you're talking, your should win, will win is even changing.
No, because I really think that, I stand by Amber should win, because I think that Amber also has, I'm also looking at it from who's got, and I know this is probably not a way to do it, but I'm looking at stage time, who's the level of the performance and, several factors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what Amber does in Hadestown is so unique.
Mm-hmm.
And who Amber is as an actor is so special.
Mm-hmm.
She has a light when she's on stage that you don't see very often. It's similar to André de Shields.
Yeah.
They're very similar in that way. You don't see many performers that quite have what they have.
Yeah.
And so I'm I guess I'm a little smitten.
Yeah, I'll say. Before we move on, I will just say, Ali Stroker would be making history as the first actor in a wheelchair to win a Tony Award. She has already made history as the first actor in a wheelchair to be nominated for a Tony Award. And she's also, fun fact, the first person ever to be nominated for playing Ado Annie, which is incredible.
We talked about this last night.
Oklahoma has had so many revivals with so many famous women playing this part, and none of them have ever been nominated until Ali Stroker.
How did Christine Ebersol not get nominated for the landmark 1979 revival that I talk about endlessly?
I imagine the nominators are probably all dead, so we can't ask them, but...
That is possible. And I do have to say, if my long ramble about Mary Testa and Amber Gray makes it onto the actual final episode, I do have to say, I don't mean to take away anything from Ali at all.
She gives
all of these women give equally
all six
incredible performances.
All five of them could win the Tony.
All five of them should.
Right.
And I don't feel that way about every
Featured actress in a musical is always a category that... It turns out you love all of them, right? I mean, that's the way it was last season, for sure. Perfect. Okay.
Who won last season? I don't even remember.
Lindsay Mendez for Carousel.
Oh.
Right? Exactly. She was so fantastic. Okay. Best performance by a leading actor in a play. My money is on Bryan Cranston in Network.
My money to win will be Bryan Cranston, but my should win is Jeff Daniels.
Mm.
Yeah. And until I actually wrote it down, it was Jeff Daniels. And then I thought, well, if I'm playing to win, Brian is probably going to win.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I agree. Anything else to say there?
No. Again, it's been a great year for plays, and I think that's reflected in all of the categories. I would say this is my least favorite category.
Yeah.
Just because I think there were actors in here that didn't get nominated that should, and da da da, da, but
right.
I don't want to cause any controversy, so let's just go on to
sure.
Let's go to the ladies.
So, best performance by a leading actress in a play. This is one of the few categories this year that's actually six nominees, which is very exciting. They can do that, right?
Yeah.
When there's a tie, right? That's what pushes it to six.
I'd like to know
who the tie. Okay, well, I'm going to read this list because it's pretty imposing. Annette Bening and All My Sons.
Love.
Laura Donnelly in The Ferryman, which...
Love.
Yeah, I mean, she's incredible. Elaine May in The Waverly Gallery.
We've had portions of Elaine May's voice on this show.
Exactly, that's right. Janet McTeer in Bernhard Hamlet.
Possibly one of the great, most underrated actors currently living.
She's incredible. She's an icon. Laurie Metcalf in Hillary and Clinton. Need we say anything more about Laurie Metcalf?
Throw an award at her every time she shows up
on stage. It's always deserved. It's always deserved. And Heidi Schreck in What the Constitution Means to Me.
Well, Rob Russo loves Heidi Schreck.
I do love Heidi Schreck. So here's my my little breakdown. I think that Heidi should win the Tony Award, and I think that Elaine May will win the Tony Award. And I'm not upset about that, because Elaine May... That performance was absolutely shattering in the Waverly Gallery. If you didn't see it, it's closed. It was a limited engagement last fall, but she played an older woman who was basically going through dementia, struggling with Alzheimer's. And over the course of the play, you witness her just completely, for lack of a better phrase, lose her mind. And it was so heartbreaking. And then you sat back and you thought, oh my gosh, Elaine May is 86 years old and she's doing this play 8 times a week. And it was one of those performances that, this is such a trite thing to say, but she wasn't acting. You were watching someone exist on a stage in a way that was just so raw and beautiful. So I have no problem with her winning this Tony Award. And I think she's got it in the bag, frankly. But that said, we've just named 5 other incredible women. Annette Bening, who hasn't been on Broadway in 30 years. Janet McTeer, who, as you said, is one of the greatest living actresses. Laurie Metcalf, who...
In a not great play.
In a play that was not that great. Laurie Metcalf, who, again, she could read the phone book and I would want to give her a Tony Award because she's that magnetic of a performer.
In fact, I think she's so good that we should produce Laurie Metcalf reads the phone book and see if she gets a nomination.
Yeah, I think she would.
She could just read, like, you know, L through M.
Yeah. I mean, like, well, she's, you know, and she's won a Tony Award the past 2 years.
Yeah. There's a version where she wins.
Yeah, there's I wouldn't be surprised.
There's a big version where she's an upset. Well, this is, I think, this might be a symptom of us spending too much time together, but I'm in full agreement. My should win is Heidi Schreck, and my will win is Elaine May.
There you go.
I came very close to, because I think there's a possibility also where, you know, Constitution does very well on June 9th.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay, moving on. Best performance by a leading actress in a musical. Another really great category with, you know, well, let's just say it, we're two gay men. We love our female actresses. But Stephanie J. Block for The Cher Show, Caitlin Kanunen, I said that wrong, for The Prom, Beth Lovell for The Prom, favorite of the show, Eva Nobelzada for Hadestown, and Kelly O'Hara for Kiss Me, Kate. I mean, that is an impressive group of women.
It is, and I think you said all the names right, which is unusual for you.
Wow.
But,
yeah, so, Jamie, what do you think?
Oh, well, it's no surprise to anybody who follows me on social media or knows anything about me, but Beth Lovell.
Should win, will win?
Should win. I don't think she will win.
Okay.
Again, I would be extremely excited if she did win, and I will scream so loud that everyone in America will hear it. But I do think Stephanie Block is going to win, and I think she deserves it as well. This is another one of these things. I think Caitlin Kanunen is fabulous.
Oh my gosh.
I think Eva is fabulous. Mm-hmm. I think Kelly is fabulous. Like, this is another tough call.
Right.
But I do think that Beth Lovell is giving one of those rare once-in-a-career performances. Mm-hmm. However, Stephanie Block is not doing an impersonation.
No.
She's embodying Cher.
Yeah.
And she's got competition on that stage because there are two other women who are doing an incredibly similar thing, embodying different ages of Cher.
Yeah.
So that's tough, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of competition on that stage to get the spotlight. And they all three managed to find it. But Stephanie is quite special.
Yeah. Well, we have the same brain here because I agree with you. I think Beth Lovell should win. But I think Stephanie J. Block will win. It really feels like her year. It's incredible to think that she has now created like half a dozen or more roles in original Broadway musicals over the course of her very impressive career, and she's never won a Tony.
Yeah. Has she been nominated before?
She's been nominated.
She was nominated for Falsettos?
I believe so. I mean, she performed.
Featured actress?
That incredible number, yeah.
I'm breaking down. She did a great job with that number.
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have to get my Catholic guilt off. I feel guilty for not choosing Beth in both things. So
are you changing your answer? Mid-show?
This is probably the third time I've said this in the last 20 minutes. I have this very clear vision of Beth Lovell walking away.
Jamie's
with an
having
award.
Visions.
Yeah.
Wow.
This wouldn't be the first.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Okay. Best performance by a leading actor in a musical. And this is a season where where, no offense to anyone, but these five
Let's
gentlemen.
Let's offend people.
Let's make some news here, right? None of these five gentlemen are household names, right? Even among theater fans, right? I mean, maybe Santino Fontana, maybe Alex Brightman. But, you know, I mean, Brooks Eschmanks, I don't know how to say it. I started so confidently. Brooks Eschmanskas has been a...
It's Eschmanskas.
Eschmanskas has been, you know, a veteran of Broadway. He's done so many shows. He's fabulous in everything he's done. But, I mean, maybe I'd offend him if he were sitting here, but maybe not. Maybe he would agree. Like, outside of Midtown, is he a name that anyone really knows, right? Probably not.
You're on your own with this one.
Oh, dear. You know, Derek Bass.
No, I agree with that. I'm being funny.
Too Proud.
Yeah.
Damon Donahoe.
Well, Derek's was on a TV show. I mean, he's, you know.
See, I don't watch TV, so I don't know these TV
That's
people.
That's another thing we have to tackle.
Damon Donahoe in Oklahoma, Alex Brightman in Beetlejuice, Santino Fontana in Tootsie. So, I mean, this is a long way of me saying, I think Santino's got this award in the bag. In fact, they've probably already engraved it. I can't imagine anyone else really winning this Tony Award.
Well, this is where we disagree because should win is Brooks Eschmanskas.
Yes.
And my will win is Brooks Ashmanskas.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because I think he's going to...
He's going to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to do a little interlude, and we're going to go through all the design awards at lightning speed. So starting with best scenic design of a play, Jamie.
I picked The Ferryman.
I picked The Ferryman as well.
I know.
How about that? Okay. Best scenic design of a musical.
We picked the same thing. I picked Beetlejuice.
Wow, we agree a lot more than I thought we would.
Yeah.
Okay, best costume design of a play.
I picked The Ferryman.
Me too. How about
I
that?
I know.
Although
sort of feel like it could be Gary.
I was just about to say, I'm feeling it could be Gary for some very clever reasons.
Yeah.
Clever, naughty, I don't know, you decide. If you haven't seen the play, I don't want to give it away, but there's some costume pieces that are rather animated.
Yeah.
Okay, best costume design of a play. Sorry, of a musical.
The Cher Show.
The Cher Show. It's gotta be Bob Mackie.
Yeah.
How do you not give Bob Mackie a Tony Award?
I
don't even know if he has one, but even if he does, give him another one. His costumes were incredible.
They're incredible.
And it was a testament to that production that they put their money behind those costumes, right? Because they didn't have to, and... I don't know how many costumes were in that show, but it's insane.
Oh, we did know we had this.
We had
500
status.
Or something.
Yeah, it's insane,
crazy. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's stunning.
Yeah. Okay, best lighting design of a play, Jamie.
I think we both picked Network.
Wow, gosh. Okay, best lighting.
Well, that
design
was one of the only things I liked about Network.
It was an incredible design. Yeah, the physical production.
The physical production was fabulous.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah.
And Bryan Cranston.
Yes. Best lighting design of a musical.
Hadestown.
Yes. Okay. Best sound design of a play.
I picked Network.
I picked Network too. Wow, this is so boring for our audience. I will say though, I was very bummed that All My Sons was not nominated. And I'll say why. The entire play takes place in a backyard. And there is a sort of soundtrack running from the moment the play begins until it ends of environmental noise.
Oh.
And it is so well crafted around moments that happen in the play. And it happens over the course of different times of day. The use of the sound design and the way it was piped into the theater in particular to create that atmosphere was, to me, so essential to the success of the production. Wasn't even nominated, so I've got that off my chest. Moving on. Best sound design of a musical.
King Kong.
Oh, okay, we disagree here.
Yep.
I think Oklahoma should win this
Why?
One.
What was the sound? I mean, King Kong had like major sound stuff going.
It's very true.
It's the one award they're going to get.
What?
I don't know.
They might. Aaron looks shocked. Aaron is just shocked. So
I got very passionate about King Kong.
My Oklahoma position is a little based on personal experience. So I went to the first preview of Oklahoma at the Circle in the Square.
I was there.
You were there with me. It was fascinating to see that show, which is very intimate, be repurposed in the Circle in the Square Theater. It had been at Santa Ana's Warehouse last fall where I had seen it. And what was abundantly clear to me over the course of that first performance was that they had not figured out the sound design for the play. Because whole parts of it couldn't be heard, other moments were too loud, there was an imbalance throughout the theater. I went back with Jamie on opening night.
Oh shit, we've seen it twice
together. And it was seamless. And I went back again with a friend to see it, and I'm going for my birthday. So clearly I'm obsessed with Oklahoma and this production in particular.
I think you're a little clouded. I think your judgment's
slightly
clouded.
My judgment may be a little clouded, but I've seen the show while they're working through the kinks of the sound design, and I was watching the production team take notes throughout the entire first performance, and then I've seen it on opening night and since, and what they did in that space and with that story and the sound of it is, I think, pretty incredible.
I'm just not sure I agree that the sound designers doing their job warrants getting an award, but I could be wrong about that.
Already.
King Kong, like what they do to John Hoche's voice,
right.
How they make that echo, and that's That theater shakes, that theater rattles, that theater rolls. It's
shake,
like
rattle and roll. Okay, we see you.
Thanks for picking it up.
We see you.
What? I'm not shilling for King Kong.
No, absolutely.
It'll be gone by August, but I'm just simply saying I think they had the best sound design of the musicals.
That's the point of this. That's the point of this.
What?
It's to hash out our differences.
I know we're finally having like an electric moment.
Okay, so that was our blitz. We went through those design awards really quickly. So now we're moving up the ladder. Best book of a musical.
Okay.
So this is the nominees are Ain't Too Proud, Beetlejuice, Hadestown, The Prom, and Tootsie.
Yeah.
I think that The Prom should win, and I think that Tootsie will win.
I agree with that.
Before we move on, I do want to say something about The Prom, because I actually think it is actually the funniest show on Broadway.
I agree.
And I think it is so smart. It is so smartly done. And something that I think people don't appreciate about this category, about what a book writer actually does, is that it is not just writing dialogue. It is so much more than that. It is crafting the story. It is creating the moments for the interpolation of songs. It is knowing what needs to be sung versus what needs to be spoken. It is developing these characters. I mean, it is so much more than just coming up with a joke, right? They have crafted a really beautiful, heartwarming show that, you know, sort of masquerades as a silly comedy, right?
Yeah.
But actually has
this
heart.
And that's what the deceptive thing that they
right,
do.
Right, has this heart beating in it that is so incredible. I loved The Prom. I've loved it every time I've seen it. I'm a little worried that it's not going to get the Tony love that it deserves. And that it's the only sort of non-brand name musical on Broadway this season, you know, new musical, and that it has a difficult road ahead. But for my money, they should win.
We'll be back in a week or two, right?
Yeah, I'm going back.
And we will weep.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Okay, so moving on to the sister of that category, Best Original Score.
Hadestown.
This is another one of those ones where the categories where if Anais Mitchell doesn't win the Tony Award for Best Score, they should stop giving out Tony Awards because nothing will be
she's winning
sense in the world.
It's Hadestown. Yeah. Let's move on.
Okay. There we go.
No, I mean, you can talk about the other shows.
No, I'm being flippant. It's fine.
No.
Well, I guess what I will say before we move on, because I do think it's important to mention, is that Be More Chill got a single Tony nomination, and it is for its score. Joey Conniss, his score for Be More Chill, is what I thought was the best part of the whole show. I find it incredibly catchy. I think it's quite effective. Michael in the Bathroom, as we've talked about, is, you know, sort of a standout song of the season, right? If you wanted to pick a song of in any musical that you thought was, you know, really stuck with you. So I'm glad to see the show get nominated, you know, this recognition for the score, even if it didn't get literally any other nomination. An interesting thing is that To Kill a Mockingbird, a play, was nominated for Best Score because the category is Best Original Score Written for the Theater. So it's not Best Original Score of a Musical, right?
And I think that changed
at some point.
You also have to say who wrote that score.
Adam Gettle.
Adam Gettle, yeah. who is no slouch.
No,
he is the grandson of Richard Rodgers. Yeah.
The son of Mary Rodgers.
Mary Rodgers. I mean, this is pedigree upon pedigree
right.
upon pedigree. Yeah. And as you said earlier, this is an unusual get for them, right? This play
right.
to get original score.
Right.
And it, again, it goes to the power of how brilliant To Kill a Mockingbird is.
Yeah.
Every element of it works and is special and
totally. And one thing I, you know, major tip of the hat to Scott Rudin, the producer, because not only did he get Adam Gettle to write the music for this play, but also this season, Danny Elfman, who's an acclaimed film composer, did the music for Gary. And Philip Glass, who is like my music idol, wrote the score for King Lear, an original composition that is gorgeous. And I was actually really hoping that Philip Glass was going to get nominated for Tony. I was like, I think the only critic who actually really enjoyed the quartet that were playing this score live on stage throughout the entire play. But I did, and I'm a huge Philip Glass fan. So.
And you also did on this show admit to walking around Manhattan
yes.
listening to Philip Glass on your headphones.
I listen to Philip Glass every day.
Yeah.
Some piece of his. He's written so much material. It's incredible.
I think that's unique to you. Anybody else out there listening to Philip Glass every single
day? Every
day,
every day.
That's a big statement.
My daily dose of Glass, yeah.
Can I ask you a side question?
Yeah.
You certainly may.
Do you have a favorite song from this season? Not necessarily the entire score, but just one song.
Yeah, favorite song. You know, it's funny. I have a friend who always says, how come they don't do a Tony Award for best song?
Well, that's interesting.
Right? That would be an interesting category.
Okay, so what's your Tony Award for best song? Which is what Aaron's basically asking you.
Yeah. You're putting me on the spot. I think I would probably have to go with the opening of Hadestown. That, I don't even know what the song is called, but the way
that... Way Down to Hadestown?
Well, no, that's the title song, right? This is like, starts with that trombone yeah. and...
Oh, that's the song we put on the show originally,
yeah.
which is called, God, we should know this. Aaron, look it up.
I'm a sucker for an opening number, generally, but I think that song has stuck with me since I first heard it. And not that something being memorable is necessarily the mark of it being an effective song, but I also think it has the benefit of being an incredible opening number that establishes the tone of the piece, all of the characters, all of the relationships. And it's just a damn good song.
It's called The Road to Hell.
Road to Hell.
The Road to Hell, right,
that's
which
right.
we put on, which is the...
Yes.
Yeah. was on a very early episode
yeah.
that we did.
It's been in my head. When it's not Philip Glass, that song has been haunting me for weeks now.
I will say that mine is a comedy song, and that's
yeah.
It's Not About Me
Ugh.
From The Prom.
Yes.
And that's mostly because every time I listen to that, I relive that first moment in the theater where I heard the song
yeah.
and saw Beth Level give this brilliant, narcissistic, fabulous performance where everything you needed to know about her character was in the first like 30 seconds of that song.
It's
and
so
I will feel that way about that song forever. And I also
yeah.
love You Happened from that. I actually love the
score
of the Prom.
Of the Prom is fantastic.
So, and I will say this, I've been fairly silent about Be More Chill, but I do agree with you that Michael in the Bathroom that's a song I will admit I listen to almost every day.
Yeah, it's objectively just a fantastic song.
Yeah, and it's also the only song on my phone I know how to play. So,
I hear
it a lot.
If we added a Philip Glass song to your phone, right? with then you listen every
you
day
go back
to some
and
Philip
no
Glass?
No fucking way.
Wow.
No, I would. I love Philip Glass. I was just taking a cheap shot.
That's funny.
I put Philip Glass on the show, people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, you did.
I did.
Yeah.
That's when Rob said, I listen to Philip Glass
yeah,
every day.
Right.
The first time.
Okay. Brilliant. Okay. Well,
wait, Aaron. You asked the question.
Yes,
you need to answer.
What's your song?
Even though you haven't seen all the musicals.
No, right. I haven't seen all of them. And
neither of the voters. Isn't that
oh,
funny?
Deep cut.
Yeah, it's true.
I think that... I'm trying to force myself to pick something that's not from Hadestown because that's all I've talked about so far, even though I've seen other things and really enjoyed other things. I think that it might be Living It Up on Top.
Mm.
But I also just love the scene of Why We Build the Wall so much.
Yes.
With the lights, which I know is not about that song itself, but everything about that scene really hits really well.
Yeah.
So I like that a lot.
Yeah. The next category is Best Orchestrations. the cousin of our best score category. As Jamie knows, I have a real sweet spot for orchestrators. I think that they are like the unsung heroes of every single musical on Broadway. And what they do, I still don't fully understand how they do what they do. And we had Ted Sperling on the show, who is an orchestrator. And I think I even said that, and he was like, I know, right? Like, it's, yeah. And he's done it, right? Like,
and he explained it. So you should maybe incredible. Go back and listen to that
no,
episode.
No, but I mean, like, okay, all right. Rude. No, but just how you take that piano score and you hear a full orchestra playing it. Is
that, I mean, that's a talent.
It's a talent.
Few people
it's an extraordinary
have,
thing.
And I agree. I don't get it.
Yeah. You know, I forget who said, I feel like it was Jason Alexander who said this about Jonathan Tunick doing the orchestrations for Merrily. And he, you know, he was like so fascinated. And he asked him, like, how do you do this? And Tunick was just like, well, I literally sit in a silent room with the piece of paper and I hear it. I just hear it. Like it's no more complicated than that, right? But of course, it's so much more complicated than that. Jonathan Tunick, of course, is like the, you know, he's the guy for orchestrating on Broadway. But this group is not too shabby. We've got 5 nominees, including the legendary Harold Wheeler for Ain't Too Proud. He's been doing this for probably 50 plus years. And it's one of the best in the biz. I think that Hadestown should win, but I think that Oklahoma will win. What do you think, Jamie?
Hadestown.
Yeah.
Will win, should win.
I mean, there's nothing... I mean, I think the I'm, again, I'm sort of biased in that, and this is the nature of a revival. And, you know, Rick Ellis once said to us that there ought to be separate directing categories for best director of a revival versus best director of an original.
We both agree
musical.
With that.
And I think we agree with it, because... you know, when you're doing a revival, so much work has already been done for you. Not to say that you're not doing great work, but you're building upon something that already exists. And Daniel Kluger, who did the orchestrations for Oklahoma, had the existing Rogers, you know, Richard Rogers score, and had, you know, generations of Americans who know exactly what that sounds like and what that means. And he could then take that and sort of flip it upside down and make it this small bluegrass band, you know, sort of Western twang orchestration that, to me, it's like it's a brand new score. It's like hearing, it's like it was written this week. It's so resonant to the look and the feel of the production, but also current music sensibility, while also honoring the original. And that's not easy to do. At no point was I ever offended by a single moment of the way this score was reimagined, but at the same time, I was in awe of how it was reimagined for this small band that's on stage. So I think that Oklahoma will win for that reason, and because every other voter will also have their bias of this is what Oklahoma traditionally sounds like, but this is what Oklahoma could sound like in the hands of a real musical, you know, genius who's taken it and reimagined it. Whereas Hadestown. Yeah, I mean, I agree. They took that score and made it so rich and so lush and so vibrant and buoyant. It's a gorgeous score.
It is?
Yeah, yeah.
Has a revival ever won Best Orchestration?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
In fact, I was going to say, I thought Ted Sperling won as Tony, but that was for Latin La Piazza,
Okay, moving on. Best choreography, Violin Agreement. We're in Violin Agreement. This is a Violin Agreement alert.
Do you know this to be true?
Warren Carlyle, Kiss Me, Kate.
Warren Carlyle,
yeah.
Kiss Me, Kate.
Should win, will win. He's earned every ounce of that Tony Award. If you haven't seen Kiss Me, Kate, do, or I'm sure that at the Tony Awards they're going to perform Too Darn Hot, because how could they not?
I can't imagine they would do. What other number would you do?
I don't know, but that number is worth the price of admission times 2. It is incredible what he has done with that song. And it's a song that you've seen performed before, you think you know, and the storytelling that Warren, and we're on, you know, we had him on the show, obviously, so we're on a first-name basis. The storytelling that Warren does in that number and throughout the whole show is incredible and part of the whole and really, really wonderful. Okay, moving
on.
We love Warren Carlyle. Yeah, and Andre DeShields and Hadestown, and these are all of our biases.
Do you know what, Ray, do you know what my husband said this morning? You what? White boys and tap dance.
I love a tap dance. I'm always
I
here
love
for
a tap dance.
Dance. Okay, moving on. Best director of a play. We're getting towards the end.
Yeah.
Jim, what do you think?
I think Bart Scheer should win, mm-hmm. and I think Sam Mendes will win.
We agree here.
Yeah, I know this is the dullest episode ever.
I know. I was really hoping for more sparks here, but yeah, I mean,
Well, then we should have had my husband on.
Right.
You want sparks?
He's got some dogs in the fight, though. I would say, yeah. I mean, Bartlett sure had the impossible task of taking a book that everyone knows and loves and directing it on stage. That every person walking into that theater has an idea of what it should be and has an ownership over it. And he, and obviously Aaron Sorkin, who wrote the script, but isn't nominated, more on that later, created, you know, led his cast to deliver some truly stunning performances, from Jeff Daniels at the top to Gideon Glick and Celia Keenan-Bolger, who we already talked about and who we think deserve to win Tony Awards. Every member of that ensemble just are giving stunning performances. And it's a testament to them, but it's a testament to a good director, because that's what a director actually does. You know, I mean, so often in reviews, it's like they're traffic cops. They're talked about as if they're traffic cops, as if all they do is just block bodies on a stage. They guide, they shape a piece from the page to the stage. And in this process, Bart was involved in bringing this play to the stage. And it's one of the, you know, great adaptations of recent memory. All that said, Sam Mendes, I think, for The Ferryman will win. There's so much life on that stage at the Jacobs Theater. It could be utter chaos, and it moves and it breathes. It's a symphony that you're watching happen on stage in front of you, and it takes a damn good director to, through all of that, not only, you know, visualize it and block it, but also, you know, elicit these performances that very few plays, I think, leave you as stunned as The Ferryman does. So, tip of the hat to Mr. Mendes. Also, like, he's never won a Tony Award, which is crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
Because his revival of Cabaret was absolutely astonishing in the 1990s.
It was a game changer, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And also, he is, you know, he's directed, at this point, some of the largest films ever made, like James Bond films, right? He has gone on to be this incredibly, successful film director, and for him to come produce a play, direct a play in London and then on Broadway, you know, it's a real treat.
And he's married to Kate Winslet.
Well, there's that too.
So
give him the he's got to get the Tony for that.
You know, he got it all.
Right, exactly. Okay, moving on. Best director of a musical.
Oh, yes.
Okay, Jamie. You sound like you want to say something.
Yeah, Rachel Chavkin.
Yeah.
No question. No, I mean both. Yeah, she should win and she will win, which is not what you think.
Yes, I think that she should win. If I was the Tony committee, if it was a committee of one, Rachel Chavkin would get all the Tony Awards. Her work for Hadestown is absolutely exquisite. She's one of the few auteurs working on Broadway. You look at something that she has created and you say, oh yeah, that's a Rachel Chavkin piece, right? She's a brilliant director. I cannot wait for the decades we have ahead of her work on stage. All that said, I think that Daniel Fish will win for Oklahoma, because it was his vision to do this production and to make the endless number of decisions along the way to create what he did with this reimagined Oklahoma. And that vision, I think, is Tony worthy. I think he's going to win.
Okay, we disagree.
We disagree.
All right, we're at the end.
We've got four categories left, the four big ones. Let's start.
Let's blow through this. I need some tacos.
Okay. Let's start with revivals. So, best revival of a play. I think that All My Sons should win. And I think it will win, and maybe that's just my own bias, but I found that production to be absolutely stunning. Jack O'Brien did a fantastic job with his foursome of actors, Tracy Letts, Annette Bening, Benjamin Walker, and Hampton Fluker. They are fantastic together. The play left me absolutely stunned. It's a gorgeous production.
Okay, this is where we disagree woefully.
Okay.
I think Torch Song should win, and I think the Waverly Gallery will win.
Oh, okay. Yes. It's interesting. I think that if I had to pick a second show, it would be the Waverly Gallery.
The thing that Torch Song and Waverly Gallery both have working against them is that they closed.
I know.
Torch Song in January, and unfortunately, that production, though it was, you know, rightfully the talk of the town when it was off Broadway, when it came to Broadway, it just didn't catch fire the way it should have and deserved to, because it's an incredible play that Harvey Fierstein wrote in 1982. Well, he wrote it in the late 1970s, but there's a huge history there I could bore you with, but I won't. But to see it on Broadway 35 years later was a real honor of like a lifetime of theater going. And it's a shame that that production didn't get the recognition it deserved. But I'm glad it did get nominated for Best Revival, because I was worried it was going to be forgotten entirely. Also nominated was The Boys in the Band, which, again, as we said, was, you know, over a year ago, which is pretty wild. Okay, so Best Revival of a Musical. Only two this year, because there were only two possible nominees. As a surprise to no one, I think Oklahoma should win and will win.
Agree. Yeah, no question.
It's a stunning revival.
I love Kiss Me, Kate, but it's Oklahoma, Oklahoma.
Yep, I agree. Okay, so our last two awards, Best Play and Best Musical.
Right.
Which do you want to do first?
Play.
Play. Okay.
You always end with a musical.
They do on the telecast. Okay, so Best Play. Five nominees are Choir Boy, The Ferryman, Gary, Ink, and What the Constitution Means to Me. So, I think that What the Constitution Means to Me should win. And, bold take alert, I think it will win.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So do I.
Okay.
Wow. Wow. Wait. Is that what you wrote in your notes?
Yeah. It's what's in my piece. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So I alluded to this earlier. To Kill a Mockingbird was not nominated for Best Play.
No. Nor was Network.
Nor was Network. And they're two acclaimed productions that are adaptations of other works. And the committee, for whatever reason, decided not to nominate them and to nominate, you know, a play like Gary, or What the Constitution Means to Me, which are both very sort of non-traditionally what you would consider to be material that is a Broadway play. So hats off to the committee for really recognizing, creators and producers and writers and directors and all the people involved who are trying to change the nature of what we think of as a Broadway play with these nominations. I mean, Gary got 7 Tony nominations, which is pretty incredible for a play that, if you've seen it, you know what I mean when I say that, like, it is unlike anything else on Broadway, like, ever, and especially this season.
And it's a little polarizing in a way.
Yeah,
it's
of
not
course.
For everybody, for
right,
sure.
Right.
It's, and again, it's a testament to Scott Rudin for having the cojones to put this show up.
Right. So without Mockingbird, though, which I think if it were in the running, I would have to really seriously assess, you know, where I stand.
Yeah, I think if Mockingbird were nominated, I think it would win.
Right.
And I think that the should win would have been a harder call for me.
Sure.
Because
yeah.
I think that What the Constitution Means to Me is such a special. We are in full agreement on this.
Yes. Violent agreement.
The violent agreement. I feel my body hurts when you say that, Rob. But I definitely think that even though we've given The Ferryman a lot of love, and I think that it's very deserving, I think that that's the love that it's going to get, and I think that the Constitution...
Well, so it really comes down to, though, The Ferryman versus What the Constitution Means to Me, and we're recording this before the Drama Desk Awards, so we don't know where that's going to land, but so far it's been pretty much a split. What the Constitution Means to Me is a finalist for the Pulitzer. It won the Obie and was a Drama Critics Circle awardee. The Drama Critics Circle also gave The Ferryman an award for Best Play because they can play around with their categories.
Right.
And The Ferryman was also recognized by the Drama League and the Outer Critics Circle. So there's a fair split between the two. But I think something that Heather Hitchens said in our episode when we interviewed her, she's the president of the American Theater Wing, has stuck with me, and that is that the theater wing has a really grand tradition of recognizing great American plays that incisively capture the spirit of the moment, that speak to America right now. And whether it's The Crucible in the 1950s or, Torch Song Trilogy in 1982, I mean, that was incredible for that to win Best Play. Actually, I think it was the 83, no, it was the 82 Tony Awards, yeah. When it was 83, then it was 84, was The Contrafall. Harvey Fierstein was on fire in the early 80s.
Quite literally.
Flaming.
Flaming. Flaming.
Through flaming throughout the 80s. Well,
yes, exactly. That's a
he would agree with that.
That's a good memoir title.
I can. Flaming through the 80s.
Yeah, right? You know, but just like in those two instances, the committee could have gone with, you know, the voters could have gone with more, you know, quote-unquote conventional plays that, you know, are, you know, quite meritorious on their own regard. They chose to go with something that was a little more cutting edge, that, you know, spoke to the moment. And I think there's no greater example of that than what the Constitution means to me. It's the kind of play where, based on what has happened in the news that day, the audience reaction to it changes every single night. Because we are living that play right now.
For better or worse.
Right. Whereas The Ferryman is an incredible play. Jess Butterworth has written an incredible play. But it's, you know, it's an Englishman writing an Irish story. And it's, you know, about the Troubles in the 1980s. So there's some distance between the subject matter of that play and where we live today. Not as much as there ought to be, but that's why I think that what the Constitution means to me will win, because of this tradition of the theater wing really stepping up and recognizing plays like it.
Dun, da, da, da.
Drum roll, please.
That was my drum roll.
Oh, that wasn't your drum roll. What was
that? That was my drum roll.
Oh, that was your drum roll.
No.
Yes. Okay.
Dun, da, da, da.
Dun, da, da, da. Best musical.
I don't think drums sound like that.
Sir, have you heard a drum? Okay. Best musical. We've got five nominees. Ain't Too Proud, Beetlejuice, Hadestown, The Prom, and Tootsie. Jamie?
Hadestown.
Yes. Okay, so this is where I think the greatest sparks will fly, and that is because I think...
Because you are wrong.
...that Hadestown should win.
You are right.
It is my favorite musical of this season, and frankly, it is my favorite musical since I can't remember when. I mean, in my review, I used Hamilton as a reference point, that it was the most beautifully realized and exquisitely crafted musical on this side of Hamilton, and I stand by that, and I believe it.
Before you say what you're going to say next,
yes,
I think I should just warn you that your invitation to the Tony party may hang in the balance. I just want to throw that out there. It is a hot invite.
I have to live my truth, Jamie.
All right.
I have to live my truth.
Well, we can always text. I'll text you from the Carlisle.
That's right. There you go.
Send you pictures.
All of that said, again, I am not the Tony committee. I am not the voters. If I could give Hadestown 14, if I can give them 15 Tony Awards, I would. They got 14 nominations. I would give them 15 Tony Awards.
What would be the 15th?
Just for being
best song,
sexy as hell.
Best song.
There we go. Yeah. We would create the category, and I would give it.
Hey,
there you go. I love that. Yes, but I, you know, you have to listen to your gut, and my gut tells me that Tootsie is going to win Best Musical this season.
Don't agree.
You don't agree?
Not at all.
I think that Tootsie is easier to access than Hadestown. And we've gone now multiple seasons in a row where the, you know, putting scare quotes around it, artistic musical has won, right? You know, go back to Fun Home or The Band's Visit.
Gentleman's
Guide to Love and Murder. We've gone through several cycles now where there's been a really big blockbuster, you know, brand name Broadway musical that everyone's loving, and then the smaller, quieter, more intimate, more, you know, artistic and exquisitely crafted show will win the Tony Award, right? And I just have a feeling, I don't know, I hope I'm wrong, frankly, because I love Hadestown, but I have a feeling that voters this season are ready to give this Tony Award to a big, unabashed musical comedy that has brand recognition, that has scores of Americans across the country waiting for the tour to come to their town. I don't know. I it's just a feeling I have that they're going to win it. It reminds me of, and this is an imperfect analogy because there are no good analogies when it comes to this category because every year is so unique. But in 2002, You're in Town was up for Best Musical, and it won Best Score and Best Book because it was brilliant. It was an absolutely brilliantly crafted original musical that was like unlike anything you'd ever seen before, and that was another example of downtown coming uptown to Broadway, right? What like Hadestown has done. And also that season was Sweet Smell of Success, which I know got a bum rap, but Marvin Hamlisch's score.
We love that show.
I love that show. I love a dark show, I love a noir. Also, but Marvin Hamilton's score, you should, you know, if you haven't listened to it, go listen to it. It is brilliant. But what won Best Musical that year? Thoroughly Modern Millie, right? It didn't win Best Book. It didn't win Best Score. But it won Best Musical because when you sat back and you looked at the season and you looked at all the nominees, the parts of that show created a greater whole. And it was a tap dancing musical comedy, just like Tootsie is. In a moment where, you know, let's remember 2002, that was, you know, the year of 9/11 in New York. The city was devastated, and Broadway is the heart of New York City. I believe that in my bones. And it was a really tough year for New York. And what did we want? We wanted to tap dance, right? And Millie won. And I get this sentiment that people just kind of want to sit back and laugh and not have to think. And that's what Tootsie provides, right? It's a story that is so absurd on its face. And like, even though they've done 50 million backflips to update the gender politics of it to make it palatable, it still kind of irks. And there's a really great review by a queer critic who points out all the sort of transphobia embedded in the production. But I don't think voters are thinking about that. I don't think that they're processing Tootsie in the way that I am, and especially people of my generation are. Based off the reviews, people love it. It's a crowd pleaser, and it's easy to love. Hadestown is a little more, you know, erudite, right? It's a little more learned. It's a little smarter. It's a lot smarter. It's a little more artisanal. It's a little more crafted. It appeals more to the Brooklyn crowd than it probably, you know, does to the voters. I don't know. As you're fond of saying, Jamie, as you blink your eyes at me with this expression of hatred boiling, there is no they, right?
Right. Who are they?
Who are they?
Who are the they?
Who are these voters that
I did not come
about?
Up with this concept. Right? No, it's somebody much smarter than I
yes.
am points
it's
that so out to
It's so true.
Me.
They don't act as a unit. They don't. No. They don't convene a convention and debate and hash this out. No, everybody votes how they want to vote, right?
Correct. Well, so, I'm sure there are agendas and there's campaigning and all of that stuff. Let's be honest about it. I disagree with you.
But that's my rant.
No, you're entitled to your rant. I will miss you on June 9th.
Wow.
I had fun with you last year at the Tony party.
Nearly was mine. That's the song from Brigadoon, right? South Pacific.
Wow. Ooh, you're wrong on so many occasions tonight.
Yeah.
If you want, Jamie, I can just edit out everything Rob has said for the entire episode.
Redacted.
That is the redacted.
I will say, I don't feel good about it, but I have to live my truth, and that's what I think is going to happen. I want very much for Hadestown to win Best Musical. I think it deserves it.
Well, look, anything could happen, right?
Yeah.
Tootsie could win every award. Hadestown could win nothing. Oklahoma could win everything. Everything could be
split. You never know.
Between all the shows, it's...
There's no Hamilton and there's no producers, right? So we don't know what's going to happen.
Anything's possible. And I love upset just as much as anybody else does. I think it's great. I still have tremendous guilt about picking Stephanie Block over Beth Level.
Wow, yeah.
I just have to say it one more time.
PTSD from this episode.
I do. I'm going to have to send Beth another candle.
Yeah,
right. I think Beth Level, you have another Diptyque candle coming your way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we will all find out on Sunday. So
we will.
Yeah,
Sunday we will. Well,
stay tuned.
It's been delightful.
It's been a lot of fun. Thank you for listening. It's been a great season.
Yeah, we're almost at the end.
And we're almost at the end of our season, The Fabulous Invalid.
Yes, both seasons are coming to a close.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks so much. And let's check social media to see how we actually do. I'm going to do some analytics on this.
Yeah, of course you will.
After the fact.
Then you'll send them to me and I'll just repost them.
Yeah, and we'll see how we did. Last year I did okay, but I
clearly, I should have looked at your last year.
I clearly let my heart lead my head, and I tried to be a little more headstrong this year in doing my predictions, but it's hard.
Yeah, I have to say is Glenn Close.
Right. That's
I'm still not
still
over that
very
one.
Raw moment.
All right, well, we digress.
Yes, I will say one cheesy final closing note is that there are no losers at the Tony Awards, only winners.
That is not true.
Because...
There are the majority of the people that night are losers. What do you talking about?
To be nominated is winning.
That's what a loser says. That's just bullshit.
You can tell I've never won an award.
No. You? You clearly have not.
but this is, you know.
No, everybody's a winner.
How do you give? But how do you give out awards for art? Right. I mean,
right.
It's a larger conversation,
yeah,
right?
A larger
but
conversation.
We do,
and I
so,
do agree with you,
right? You know, I mean, who's to say that Bryan Cranston is better than Jeff Daniels? What does that even mean, right?
No, because Jeff Daniels is one of the greatest living actors we have,
right? I mean, you know,
so is Laurie Metcalf,
right?
I mean, you're talking about
how
people
do you pit these
who
people
are at the height
right.
of their.
It's like the Olympics
craft.
It's like the Olympics,
yeah.
right? When those yeah. skiers line up at the top of the slope, right? They all know each other because they've been competing against each other forever. And you never know who's going to win, and they all deserve to win because they've all worked their asses off to get there. And that's how I think about the Tony Awards, right? If you were nominated, even if you weren't nominated, but if you're working on Broadway, you know, but especially if you were nominated for a Tony Award, it means that you're an Olympian, right? And you've got to the top of that slope, and you look at the person on your left, you look at the person on your right, and you know that they've worked just as hard as you have, and they've put in just as much time and blood and sweat and tears, and they're just as talented as you are. And you know, it's a matter of taste, it's a matter of the moment, and the quirks of who's nominated and how people are feeling, and you know, at the end of the day, it's meaningless. Unless you win, right? And then it's the most amazing accomplishment you could ever have, and you should rightly tout it.
We have to end this. I need tacos.
Okay, let's go.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. You can hear us anytime on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you download podcasts. The Fabulous Invalid is a production of O&M Etc. and The Fabulous Invalid, LLC. Our theme music is by Lucky Chops. Today's episode was edited and engineered by Aaron Kaufman. Find us online at thefabulousinvalid.com and on social media at Fabulous Invalid. And be sure to tune in next Wednesday.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.